All right, Rabosai, good morning, good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's share. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for Adar Aleph. Mrs. Selma Wolf for dedicating all of Shimon Joshua's this month with immense gratitude for the refuos from Hashem and the merit of a refuos and for all of those in need and in the schus of our brave soldiers and the return of Merit Hashem b'sha'a tova of our hostages. The Schwartzbaum family in memory of Rabbi Aaron Schwartzbaum, Aaron Yosef ben Meir Zichron Livracha, the Ziv Levine and Berman families in memory of Bill Ziv, Zev Shmuel ben Yisrael Zichron Livracha, our week of learning sponsors, Steve Golaskov, in honor of the bris of his grandson, Nachum David ben Elio Baruch Halevi, and our Daf Yomi sponsor for today, Alan Wiseman, in honor of the marriage of his granddaughter, Devorah Miriam, to Moshe ben Natan in Bnei Brak, happened last night. Baruch Hashem, Alan is actually joining us on Zoom this morning. Baruch Hashem, the Chassan and Kala should just be zocha to a life filled with happiness, bracha, mazel, and simcha. And with that, let us begin. I don't know why YouTube is not coming up again. I don't know why, but everything else seems to be working. But all right, so let's go. A lot to do. Baruch Hashem, Hazman Katzar v'Hamalacha Meruba. Baruch Hashem, as always, a lot to do and not a lot of time. So we are picking up today's daf is Kuf Yutes, the last daf of Baba Kama. Baruch Hashem, Abba Aleinu L'Tova. So today's daf is Kuf Yutes. We are picking up on Kuf Yutes on the days 118b. And we are picking up three lines down into the wide lines. Amr of Zvid, Mishnah Rav. So remember again, we are in the midst of an overwhelmingly riveting and fascinating machlokes, which is, if you steal something and then you return it, Zvid says, I just want to point out something beautiful. How incredible is it that as we get to the end of this Masechta, we're talking about people who steal stuff and return it. Zvid says, life is a journey. When we started in these sugyas, we just spoke about people who stole stuff and didn't return anything. Now we're speaking about people, Baruch Hashem, who go ahead and steal things and return them. Musar Haskil, give people enough time and they will come through. Give people the time to redeem themselves and they come back from even the worst mistakes. So now remember again, we're talking about in the sugya about when you return something. First of all, where is everybody? It's the last half of Baba Kama. So text your friend if there's somebody missing at your table or 14 people missing around your table. Right? Text them and say, what is the matter with you? What is the matter with you? How can you possibly sleep through this? It's the last half of Baba Kama. All right, maybe they were up late learning something else. They're up late. Give it time. I should take my own muster. Good. I will give it time. Good. So now listen to this. Remember, we're talking about now in the sugya where if you steal something, you return it. What obligation do you have to inform the owner that the object is missing? So that's the middle of our sugya over here. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Zvid Mishrei Dirava, changes it over here to Begonev Mirshus Bailim. Begonev Mirshus Bailim, Kulei Amalo Pligi Kid Rav Chista. So I will say, if you steal an object from the domain of the owner, everyone agrees that the halacha follows Rav Chista. Namely, again, that one is obligated to go ahead and inform the Adam that the object has been stolen. Vahacha, Bishomer Shagana Mirshuso, Shiyachsir Lamakom Shagana Kamiflegi. But say here the machlokis is when you steal an object, you have an obligation to return it to the very same Rishus that you stole it from. Rabbi Akiva says, Kal Salo Shmiraso, that once you steal an object, ultimately again, your obligation of Shmira has come to an end. Rabbi Shmuel Savar Lo Kal Salo Shmiraso. Rabbi Shmuel says, no, the din ultimately again of his Shmira has not ended. So therefore, again, the same way that a Shomer has an obligation to restore the object to the exact Rishos that he took it from, so to again, even though a Shomer turns into a Ganov, that Shmira has not come to an end, and therefore he has an obligation to go ahead and return it to the very same place that he took it from. Lema Minyan Potre Tinahi. So remember again, let's say that this concept of counting, so we've seen this idea before. We saw this in the Mishnah, right? That what happens if he steals something, return it. The owner is unaware, but he counts, let's say, the flock. He counts the flock. So now, after counting, he recognizes that everything is present. Is that enough to go ahead and exempt the thief from liability? This is a great case. We'll say, watch this. Let's say Reuben steals an object from Shimon. And what happens? Reuven wants to do tshuva, but Reuven is embarrassed to do tshuva. So let's say he stole money, or he stole $1,000, whatever, he stole a couple $100. So now it happens to be that he's purchasing an object from Shimon. See, he decides to essentially slip in some extra money into the purchase price, and that extra money is the amount of money that he initially had stolen from Shimon. So Rosa says, what's happening in this case? So Reuben is paying back the stolen money, but what? Shimon doesn't necessarily have any idea that he's stealing it back. That he's giving it back. So that's the case of a gozlos chavero. Reuben stole from Shimon, and now Reuben's purchasing an item from Shimon, and what he does is he adds more money, slips more money into the purchase price. That additional money represents the money that he originally stole from Shimon. So ultimately, has Reuben fulfilled his obligation of returning the stolen property? So Tani Chadi Yotza. So one opinion says he's Yotze. V'Tani Idach Lo Yotza. And the other opinion says that he's not Yotze. Savru Adichol Yamar Esul Rabbi Yitzchok. So we assume everyone holds of Rabbi Yitzchok. What does Rabbi Yitzchok say? The Amar Adam Asur Yilmash Reish Bekisa Bechol Shah V'Shah. And what Rabbi Yitzchok says, we saw this in yesterday's daf, that it is common for a person to kind of feel around his money purse, right? All the time. So a person knows when money's missing, when money's not missing. Obviously, the Gemara says, "My love, hakam mifligi." So, what are they arguing about? Demand the amar sabar. The one who says, "Demand the amar yatsa." The one who says, "Rabbi said that when Reuven stole from Shimon, and then ultimately again was purchasing an item from Shimon and slid extra money into the purchase price." So, the one who says that Reuven is now yosei, the returning of a lost object, he holds that what minyan poter. He holds that simple counting. So what's gonna end up happening? Shimon's gonna count his money, right? And what is he gonna find? He's going to find ultimately that he has what? Purchase price plus additional amounts. And therefore he will come to realize that what? That all of the money that was taken from him was returned to him. So now you have Rabbi Yitzchok who says that a person is always counting the money in their money purse, right? And that must, and therefore again, it must be that even though Reuben is returning the stolen money, unbeknownst to Shimon, Shimon will come to find out because it's common for people to go ahead and count their money. Uman do amar lo yatsa, the opinion that says, no. When Reuben slips in more money into the purchase price, he does not fulfill his obligation of returning stolen property to Shimon. Savra minyan eino poter. He'll hold that even though it's going to be common for Shimon to go ahead and count his money, simple counting of money and recognizing that now he is financially whole does not go ahead and fulfill the obligation of hashava, of returning lost property. Incredible. Amri, Sigmar says, no. Yisrael and Rabbi Yitzchak. If you really hold the Rabbi Yitzchak, namely that a person always counts their money, everyone will agree that the counting, essentially, when we say minyan poter means the counting fulfills the obligation of returning the lost object. What does it mean? Since a person is always counting, that means they're going to recognize that what? That they have all of the money that they were once lacking, and therefore the mitzvah of hashava, the mitzvah of returning lost property, has been fulfilled. That Rabbi Yitzchak could very well be that the core machlokes is Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak is more of a behavioral machlokes. What's his behavioral machlokes? Do people constantly count their money or not? That's the shayla. Ela Rabbi Yitzchak kamiflagi. Mar isleid Rabbi Yitzchak, umar lesleid Rabbi Yitzchak. Ultimately, again, one opinion holds like Rabbi Yitzchak, and one opinion doesn't hold Rabbi Yitzchak. Vibais ema. Otherwise, if you want to say the koli alma isleid Rabbi Yitzchak. Maybe everyone has Rabbi Yitzchak, namely that it's normal for a person to constantly count their money. But look, kasha, there's not a contradiction between the brises. Ha de money v'ramele b'kisei, v'ha de money v'ramele b'adei. So what's this interesting? One is talking about a case where the thief returns the money, the stolen money, into the purse of the victim, and one is talking about where he turns it into the hand. They're both saying, now here's what's fascinating about this, is if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says ha, it's like a little bit lower down in Rashi ha. Diktani lo yatsa, the money gazlan ramele yadei dinigzal hilchach ikalamim radei shlichu zel tevaso v'lo menan. So also it's very interesting. So remember, we're going back to a very specific case. Reuven stole from Shimon. Let's say obviously Shimon doesn't know that Reuven's the thief. Afterwards, what happens? Reuven is purchasing an item from Shimon. Reuven feels bad. He wants to go ahead and do tshuva, but he doesn't want to have to admit to Shimon that he went ahead and he stole it. So what does he do? He figures, okay, the object is going to cost $300. He adds in an extra $200 representing the money that he went ahead and stole. So the question is, does that work as hashava? Machlokes of brises. One brises says yes, one brises says no. The Gemara says that perhaps what's happening over here is as follows. Perhaps the machlokis is based on the following. Everyone agrees that we hold the Rav Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak holds that a person always counts their money, which means what? That at a certain point in time, Shimon, the victim, is going to realize that he's been made whole. So what's the machlokis? The machlokis, I will say, is, did Reuven put the money in Shimon's purse, or did he put it in his hand? So it was when he was paying the money. So it was, so one opinion holds that he put it in his hand. Now here's what's fascinating. It's actually, I don't know, I thought it was counterintuitive, that when he puts it in his hand, it's coming for a person to get money, and what do? They just throw it in their purse. Right? They don't count it. As opposed to if he put it in his purse, a person is much more cognizant of money in their purse, and therefore that could constitute a proper hashava. A very interesting. That's Rashi's ha. Tiktani yotza the money gazlon v'rama lekisei the gaz the nigzal the chayvan the islan Rabbi Yitzchak minyan poter. Okay, so we'll say so. Ultimately, again, fine. So that's the machlokes. So we'll say so. Now, how do we paskin? By the way, just in this case in general. Because it's actually quite fascinating. I know that we don't have time for any of this. But I will tell you like this. Because this last case of Osei is very interesting. Because what we've been focusing on this entire time. Good. So first of all, let me just say the core halacha. Right? The core halacha of Osei is when you steal something. So we've always been focused on returning the object to the owner. What our sukkah now is focusing on is what does the owner have to be aware of or not? So interestingly enough, the Rambam writes as follows. The Rambam says, the Rambam paskins, minyan potter, right? Minyan potter, meaning what? That halacha l'maaseh, if you steal money from someone, and then you go ahead and you give the money back from them, and they count the money, recognizing now that they've been made financially whole, you have fulfilled your obligation of returning lost property. Stolen property, I'm sorry. You have fulfilled your obligation. Even though what? Now we'll say, what's missing over here? What's missing over here? What's missing over here is confrontation, right? Not in a negative way. What's missing over here is me telling Reuven, by the way, I stole from you. So that Rabban Paskins, that does not have to occur, which makes sense, because if that would have to occur, most people would be very reticent to do tshuva. So now I know that halacha l'maisa, I could get the money back to the victim, and as long as the victim is going to be cognizant that the stolen money has been returned, we're good to go. We're good to go. Even if again, the victim has no idea that I ever went ahead and perpetrated this. So the Gemara says, furthermore, the Rambam says, if you steal from a person in a way that they have no idea that you took it or that you returned it, you're also good to go. So for example, I sneak into Reuven's pen, you know, at night, I steal a sheep, and you know what, I have terrible guilt, so I go ahead and I return it an hour later. So by the time Reuven wakes up the next morning, he has no idea what's occurred, I'm good. That's not what the Rambam says. However, the Rambam does say, that in a situation where, let's say, you steal something, he says, okay, so then the Rambam goes on with a whole bunch of different ideas, which we're not going to get into right now, but you can take a look. It's Hilchos Kaneva, Perek Dalet, Halacha, Sir Aleph, and Yud Beis. Now, what about the other case? What about the other case, we'll say, where you steal from someone? I steal from Reuven, I feel terrible, and now I want to return the stolen money, but I don't want to confront. So instead, I'm buying something from Reuven, so I just want to slip in some more money. So I goes as chavero, v'vliya lo b'cheshben, yatsa. So I'll say, the halacha is it works, right? So halacha l'maisa, I could slip him in, which I'll say also means something very interesting, that if I steal, so I'll tell you where this could come up, halacha l'maisa, I steal from Reuven, and I will say, but I also do business with Reuven. So there is the ability, what the Gemara is setting us up for, there is the ability to kind of make good on the theft. How? But let's say, again, let's say I can't slip in all of the money at once, but if over time, in various transactions, I could slip in a little here, slip in a little there, halacha l'maisa, there is the ability to repay the stolen property. All right, let's go. Mishnah. In lo, most a fascinating case over here. In lochin min haroin semer v'chalav ugdim. So we'll say you cannot purchase the following from shepherds. You can't purchase from them wool, milk, or young sheep. Why not? I will say why? Because there is a strong concern that they are selling stuff that doesn't belong to them. Right? The shepherd is entrusted with someone else's flock. The shepherd could have his own stuff also. But there is a very strong concern that perhaps that which you are purchasing from the shepherd, he doesn't have the right to sell. Veloma shomrei peros, eitzim uperos. Similarly, again, people who watch fruit trees, orchards, you can't purchase from them wood, nor can you purchase from them fruit. Aval lokchin min hanoshim klei tzemer b'Yehuda, uklei pishtan b'galil, v'agalim b'sharon. So we'll say again, also reflecting an interesting societal norm, the same issue applies to purchasing things from women. In other words, is there a concern that perhaps a woman is selling something that her husband hasn't consented to, that technically speaking, that belongs to her husband? So the Gemara says, but you can purchase from women woolen items in Yehuda, or linen items in the Galil, or calves in the Sharon, different regions in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi says, so ultimately, because in each of these locales, it was common for women to do commerce with these items, and therefore, again, it was permitted. Chulan sha'amru lahatnin aser. Rabbi says, in any case, it's actually a good piece of advice in general. In general, when you're buying something from someone and they tell you, don't tell anyone, right? Generally, that's a red flag. Right, that is a red flag. The kulin shomer lahatnin aser. So if somebody tells you, just don't tell anyone, or let's do this transaction where no one can see it. So lemayin says generally a good indication that you probably should not purchase it. Velochin beitzim tarnagolim mikol mokar. I will say in general you could buy eggs and chickens from anyone because in general eggs and chicken are considered to be cheap items, and therefore halacha lemayisa. There's no concern that someone's stealing it in order to go out and sell it. The Lord said, there's a tremendous Moser Haskell in that statement as well. V'chulan sha'amru lahatnin aser. He would say, you know, sometimes the best way to live life is never do anything that you would have to hide from someone else. Right? If there's something I'm doing and I only do it because no one is looking, or if there's something I'm doing and if someone else were to find out, I wouldn't want to do it, Don't do it. Anything you have to be matmin, anything you'd have to hide, much better to avoid committing in life. Incredible Yisrael. Turn up on him. Ein lo chemin aron velo izim velo gidiyim velo gizim velo talushin shal tzemer. So we'll say in general, the Raisa now expounds. These are the things that you can't go ahead and purchase from a shepherd. You can't purchase goats and not sheep and not gizin are like shearings, fleeces, velo tlushin shel tzemer, or pieces of wool that have been removed. Avalochem mehen tfurin mipnei shein shalahem. But you can't purchase from them tfurin, because ultimately, again, tfurim Rashi says, begodim tfurin, sewn garments, mipnei shein shalahem, because we assume that those actually belong to the shepherd. Velochem mehen chalav ugvina b'midbar, velo b'yishuv. Furthermore, you can purchase from the shepherds milk and cheese in the desert, but not in habitation. I will say, interestingly enough, Rashi points out over there, that's because generally the owner of the flock is mafkir any type of milk or cheese that comes from his animals in the desert, because they're in the desert, he's not going to get them back. So he's mafkir them, that's why the shepherd could have them. You could also purchase from a shepherd 4 or 5 sheep, or 4 and 5 fleeces, but not 2 sheep and not 2 fleeces. Okay, well, Rabbi Huda Omer, Baisos Lokin Mehen, Mid Barios in Lokin Mehen. You can purchase ultimately from the shepherd domesticated animals, but you cannot purchase from the shepherd any type of desert animals. So let's analyze this. Klalo Shal Davar, the general rule is, Kol Sharoa Mocher, Ubala Bais Margishpo, Lokin Mehen, Ein Margishpo in Lokin. Well, so here's the general rule. When you're buying something from a shepherd, anything that you would buy from a shepherd and the balabais, the owner of the flock, would recognize was missing, you could buy that from a shepherd. Why? Because then we could assume it's not stolen. Because we'll say, how do shepherds steal? How do shepherds steal? In very nuanced, undetectable ways. But shepherds are not going to steal in a way that the owner would know about. Therefore, you can't purchase something from the shepherd that could go undetected by the owner. But anything that you can purchase that would not go undetected, you can buy, because we assume that belongs to the actual shepherd himself. So we said before that you can purchase from a shepherd 4 or 5 sheep and 4 or 5 fleeces. Hashta yishloma arba zamninon chamisha miboy. I don't understand. But we'll say, if you could buy 4 sheep, then what? You certainly could buy 5 sheep. I was supposed to remember again, the higher the number, the more significant the sale, the harder it would be to shield that or to hide that from the actual owner, which testifies which essentially indicates that this is a legitimate transaction. So if you can buy four, you can only buy five. So Amar Chista, Arba Mitoch Hamisha. No, Rav Chista is like this. If the shepherd is watching a flock of five sheep, you can, and he wants to sell you four, you could do that, right? You could do that. Why? Because that's a pretty good indication that he's not stealing. Because if he would steal, if that type of theft would be clearly detectable. Vigadami, others explain, Rav Chista, Arba Me'eder Katan, V'chamish Me'eder Gadol. Others say, Rav Chista says, that's what? That it means you could buy four sheep from him, from a small flock, small herd, and five sheep from a larger herd. Okay? So the Gemara says, Hagufa Kashi, I don't understand. There's inherently contradictory. Amri Dalad Vehezon Dalad Vehegizin. You said four or five sheep or four or five fleeces. Dalad Vehein Avashalosh Lo. So we'll say four or five means what? Four or five means what? Four or five, but not three. Right? So the Gemara says, so that's one inference. Ema Seifa, but yet look at the Seifa. Avashalosh Tetzon, but yet the Seifa said you can't buy two sheep. What can you infer from that? Ha shalosh zabninon, but three you can. So we'll say, so which one is it? So the Gemara says, lo kasha ha bebraisa ha bekechishta. So we'll say, if they're healthy sheep, you could buy even three. We'll say, if they're weak sheep, you would need to buy four to five. Again, we'll say, the principle is a very simple one. The concern of purchasing from a shepherd is that, is he going ahead and buying stuff, or selling stuff that's not his? But the only way a shepherd steals from the owner is when the theft would be undetectable. So as long as the purchase is significant as defined, that it's significant enough that if the shepherd was selling something that did not belong to him, the owner would absolutely recognize and know this, then you could buy from the shepherd because we assume that he's not stealing. And obviously that is going to be subjective depending on what it is that you're buying. Incredible. Let's go ahead. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Baisos Lokin Lehen, Mebrayos in Lokin Lehen. Rabbi Yehuda says you can purchase domestic animals, not we'll call it like range animals, desert animals. So Omer says, Rabbi Yehuda, Reisha Kai Ulukumra, Oduma Seifa Kai Ulukula. Is Rabbi Yehuda commenting on the first part of the Mishnah, the Reisha, and therefore again he's being Machmir? Or is he commenting on the Seifa and being Mako? So Reisha Kai Ulukumra. So we'll say perhaps he's commenting on the Reisha and is being Machmir. Da Amar Lokhin Mehen Arba Vechamisha Tzom. When the Mishnah, right when the Reisha said that you could purchase from the shepherd four or five sheep, so Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, Hani Mili Baisos. That's true, domestic animals, because then the owner will know. But if you're purchasing range animals, right, a herd that's out in the desert, you can't even purchase four or five. Why? Because since it's in the desert, maybe the owner will never know. Or maybe Rabbi Yehuda is coming on the Seifa. Ulukula. And maybe he's going Lakula. What's the Kula? Right, the Seifa said, right, you can't purchase two sheep or two fleeces from the owner. Hani mili midbarios. That's true, range animals. Ava baisos shtayim nami lokhin. But I will say, when it comes to domestic animals, you could even purchase two, because again, since it's domestic, then what? The owner is going to know if they are missing. So Tashma, let's analyze this. So I will say, so just trying to figure out what is Rabbi Yehuda commenting on. So Tashma, the sign of Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lokhin baisos mehen, fein lokhin mehen midbarios. Rabbi Yehuda says, you could purchase domestic animals, you can't purchase range animals from shepherds. Ubechol mako. But I will say, whether it's domestic or range, Lokhin mehen arba bechamisha tzon. In all cases, you can purchase four or five sheep. And what's the logic of that? What's the logic? The logic is four or five, that's a lot of sheep. So that if the shepherd was stealing, you would not be able to pull off that level of theft undetected. So we'll say, top of kuf yotes. Last daf of Baba Kamo. Mido amr b'chol makom. Rabbi says, since it says in any situation, Shema mina seifa kai ulakula. Therefore, Rabbi Huda is really commenting on the seifa, and ultimately, again, he is being makel. So therefore, Rabbi says, what Rabbi Huda is coming to introduce is Rabbi Huda is saying this whole thing with numbers, how many numbers, all of this ultimately, again, all of this is dealing with halacha l'maisa, range animals. But when it comes ultimately again to domestic animals, Rabbi Yehuda would say, to domestic animals, the owner is much more aware, and therefore again, even a smaller number of sale would be permitted because the owner would be able to detect the theft. Incredible. But let me show my parents. So I'll say second line from the top, 119a. So I'll say, so the Mishnah said you cannot purchase from You cannot purchase from people who go ahead and guard fruit. You can't purchase fruit from them, right? Fruit watchmen, orchard watchmen. You can't purchase fruit, nor can you purchase wood from them. Again, once again, the concern, they're stealing. So the Gemara says, Rav Zavin Shabishta Me'arisa. So Rav went ahead and purchased Shabishta from a sharecropper. So we'll say, what's Shabishta? Rashi says, Chavidei Zmuros. Ultimately, again, a bundle of vines. So he purchased it from a sharecropper. So I'm going to say, Abai, Mishori Peros, Eitzimu Peros. Abai says, so Rav, how can you do that? How can you do that? The Mishnah says, you're not allowed to purchase wood or fruit from a fruit watchman, right? From someone who watches. So how can you purchase from the sharecropper? Amarle says, no. Hani mili b'shomer, delesle begufa da'aramidi. The Mishnah is talking about a shomer. We'll say, what is a shomer? Shomer is a paid watchman. So we'll say, what does a paid watchman get? He gets a salary. What doesn't he get? He has no share in the orchard, right? He has no share in the fruit, no share in the wood. Aval oris de isle bigave. But we'll say, but a sharecropper has a share in the fruit and in the wood. I assume that when I purchase from the sharecropper, ultimately, again, I'm purchasing from his share itself. So I will say, very interesting distinction. So Rav is coming along and saying, this din of being concerned that you can't purchase wood or fruit from the shomer is a din in the shomer, because he gets a wage, nothing else, but a sharecropper who is entitled to other things, fruit and wood, you can purchase from him. Incredible. Tana Rabbanan, shomrei peros lochem mehen kishen yoshvin umochrin vasan lifneyem. So let's listen to this. The Brice says as follows. Even people who are shomrei peros, right? So even a shomer who watches the vineyard, or orchard, whatever it is that he's watching. You can purchase produce from them as long as what? As long as they're sitting and selling and the baskets of merchandise are in front of them. Vitortani, Rashi says over here, tortani are scales. There are scales in front of them. So we'll say, why? What's the logic over here? In other words, if you set up like a business, right? You have like a stall in Machane Yehuda and you're going ahead and you're sitting and the baskets are there and the scales are there, fine. Then we assume that you are a legitimate businessman. The kulin shamru hatmein aser. I was like, I said, but anytime you go to a merchant and he says, you know what, meet me up back, right? Meet me up back. Let's say, so anyone who tells you that you have to hide the transaction, generally, again, know that they're dealing in stolen goods. Lochin mehem pesach hagino, avalo meacharegin. Similarly, again, I was saying, when you're purchasing from someone from a garden, if they sell to you the goods at the entrance, we have the garden, you're good to go. If they tell you to meet me at the back of the garden, don't do it. Itmar, gazlan ve'emas mocho. Look, no saying, I will say, this is a fascinating question. Let's say someone is known as a gazlan. So I will say, so now the question is, at what point in time are you permitted to do business with a gazlan? As well say, so the shayla is like this. And this question could be understood in a variety of different levels. Stam, I know that someone is a gazlan. But I will say, but just because someone is a thief doesn't mean that what? That everything they own is ill-gotten. Right, it could be there are thieves sometimes, you know, on the weekends, you know, or whatever, you know, just, but not all the time. So the Shaila is about to say, or someone was a gazlan, but they're doing tshuva, but I will say, but tshuva is a gradual process. So now I want to do business with, I'd like to purchase something from this person, but how do I know that it's stolen or not? So we'll say, this is fascinating. Say it, my gazlan, may must mark the lipnos. Gazlan, from what point in time are you permitted to go in and purchase on? Rav Amar Achete Rov Mishalo. Rav says you have to know that the majority of his property or his merchandise is not stolen. So therefore, we'll say, all you need is, not all you need, but you need Rov. That way, when I transact business with him, I could assume that what? That I'm purchasing from the Rov, and the Rov is not stolen. Shmuel says, no, afilo miyot shalo. Shmuel says, no, even if the minority of his property is not stolen, I have the ability to rely on the fact that as long as minority is not stolen, when I transact business with him, I am purchasing from the miyot. It's actually pretty wild. Or really, Rabbi Yehuda la'ada daylo, kidivrei omer afilo miyot shalo. So we'll say this is incredible. So Yehuda said to Ada. Ada was a person. Daila means he was a person. Rashi says, Shamish Drabanon. He used to help out the rabbis. So Yehuda pointed out to Daila that as long as the thief has a minority of his property that ultimately is his, then halacha l'maisa, you could do business with him. I will say, by the way, if you think about it, it has to be that way. Why does it have to be that way? Because it was at the end of the day, you really have no idea if someone's honest or someone's not honest. But it's otherwise, how does a capitalist society work? Right? I don't know what you are. You don't know what I am. We each have a cheskes kashrus, but Lamaisa against Rabbi Yehuda said, we operate with the premise that even if someone is a thief, as long as the miut of their property is properly gained merchandise, then you're good to go. And I will say, you could assume, you could always make the assumption that even with a thief, at least the miut of their property is properly gained. Incredible. So the Gemara goes weiter. Mamon Maser. So we'll say, what is fascinating, incredible cases. What do you do with the money of a Maser? We'll say, so remember again, we just had this case. Remember the guy, Rav Kahana snapped the guy's neck a little while ago? It was a few thousand years ago, but for us it was a little while ago. I would say, so remember again, that's a moser. A moser is someone who hands over Jews to a despotic government. So we'll say, so what can you do with the money, with the property of a moser? So Rav Huna Rabbi Huda chad amra mutra la abdo biyad. So one of them said that you are allowed to destroy the property of a moser. B'chad amra asli abdo biyad. Others said, no, you're not allowed to destroy his property. So the opinion that said that you could destroy his property, actively destroy his property, lo te mamonu chamer migufo. But say, if you're allowed to kill a Moser, as we saw by Rav Kahana, you're allowed to kill a Moser. So of course, if you can kill a Moser, then what? You can certainly destroy his property. Uman dama asr le'abdo, the opinion that says you can't destroy his property, why not? This is incredible. Dilma havele zara ma'alyo. Because maybe the Moser will have upstanding children. And therefore, again, his children will get to benefit from his property. By the way, Zara doesn't have to mean children. Zara could just mean offspring. In other words, preserve the wealth. Don't destroy the wealth, because maybe somewhere down the family chain, there is going to be someone righteous, and that righteous person will be able to enjoy the wealth. After all, the pasuk says, Uksib, Yochin Rasha, V'tzadik Yilbash. Sometimes something is prepared for the Rasha, but the Tzadik gets to wear it, which is another way of saying that sometimes Kadosh Baruch Hu gives the Rasha wealth, not for the Rasha, but for the Tzadik who is going to confer. I will say a tremendous Musar Haskil. What's the Musar Haskil? I will say, we often think that family is a determinant of who you become. Right? If you're born into a righteous family, you're going to be righteous. If you're born into a wicked family, you're going to be wicked, right? And there's certainly a lot of psychology tied up in the fact that our identity, who we are, what we are, how we see the world, is so much intertwined with our parents. And that is absolutely, unequivocally true. But lest you think that who you come from is a complete determinant of who you can become, that is unequivocally false. You choose who you become. I came from a dysfunctional family. I have dysfunctional parents. There are plenty of children who come from parents who are tzaddikim and choose to become rishon. And there are plenty of people who come from parents who are rishaim and choose to become tzaddikim. It doesn't mean that it's not a struggle. And it doesn't mean that it's not difficult to overcome baggage that you get from your family. Absolutely it is. But lamaisa, you make the choice about who you want to become. And we'll say, that again, so many different examples of this, but here it is in the Gemara. We don't destroy the property of the Moser. Why? Because he may have righteous offspring. Righteous offspring, I will say, Moser is like the bottom of the rung, right? Better to commit all other Averis than to be a Moser. Moser is the lowest of the low. And yet, even from a Moser, you could have righteous offspring. And let's say we don't choose where we come from, but we absolutely choose where we go. Incredible. Incredible. Okay, not enough time. So the Gemara goes weiter. Rav Chista, Havli Ahuari. So listen to this. Rav Chista had a sharecropper. So it's interesting. So the sharecropper was very precise in measuring everything out, right? A little bit for you, a little bit for me. Now, the problem was he was a bit too precise in that he was taking more for himself than he was entitled to. So the Gemara says, what happened? Salke. Rav Chista fired him. Kari Anafshe, and he went ahead and he said the puzzle about himself. V'tzafon l'tzadik chayal chote, kima tikvas chanaf, ki batsa ki yashal aloa nafsho. Okay, so he quoted about himself this particular pasuk from Mishlei. Tov yanchil b'nei banim b'tzafon l'tzadik chel chote. Okay, so we'll say, so now listen to this. So ultimately, the Gemara says like this. So the end of the pasuk, I will say, is as follows. It's actually quoting two psukim. So the first part of the pasuk that is really quoting that applied to himself is that sometimes the tzaddik receives that originally was hidden by the wicked. So he was referring to the sharecropper over here, who was taking stuff for himself. Once he fired the sharecropper, now he had more wealth. But now we'll say, focusing on the second part of the pasuk. The second part of the pasuk was, ki yasha ala kanafsho, that when you steal from someone, their stole their soul. Sorry, you steal from someone, their soul. We'll see who the there is, but their soul is taken away from them. So the Gemara says, whose soul are we talking about? One says it's referring to the soul of the victim, and one says that it's referring to the soul of the thief. The one who says the soul of the victim, Pasuk says, this is the derech, this is the manner, right? This is the way of every person who steals. He takes the soul of the victim. So we both say, so we refer to theft as the stealing of the soul of the victim. Pasuk says, don't steal from the poor person because he is poor. Because the Pasuk says, if you do so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will punish the thief by removing his soul. See, the soul refers to the thief. What does the first opinion do with the fact that it says nefesh by lavikach? My bailav, what does it mean bailav? Bailav the hashta means the current owner, i.e. the thief. Why is it ultimately again that their soul is lost? Because they hurt the victim. Okay, so each one is able to both say. So the shaila is who does theft have the greatest impact on? Does theft have the greatest impact on the victim, or does it have the greatest impact on the thief himself? Let's say, which is such a tremendous idea. Who would have ever thought to look at it this way? We always assume if Reuben steals from Shimon, so I will say, right, the thief steals from the victim is the victim, right? The victim is the nigzal. To which the one essentially saying is, maybe not. You know, the victim lost money. I will say, but when you commit an aveira, especially an aveira be adam lechaveira, an interpersonal aveira, the thief himself loses so much more than his money, right? The thief loses his soul. The thief loses his holiness. The thief loses his spiritual side. Both say, what a tremendous way. So we think that the person who lost the money is the true victim, whereas it could very well be that the perpetrator of the crime is the true victim of his own crime, the true victim of his own ill-gotten gains. Incredible. Both say, dramatic line in the Gemara, Amram Yochanan, Kalagozlas Chavero Shavaprutah, Kilunotel Nishmaso Mimenu. But say, when you steal from your friend, even a pruta, it's as if you've taken his soul from him. The Rebbe said, now this is a very dramatic statement. The Gemara says, Shinemar, Kin Arachos Kol Botsei Abatzas Nafsho Balav Yikach. So actually, before we get to this, let's do it. So let's say, as the Pasuk says, Kin Arachos Kol Botsei Abatzas Nafsho Balav Yikach. When you steal from someone, you take their soul. So the Pasuk says, Va'omer, Va'achol Ketzircha V'lachmecha Banecha Ubnosecha. Says, someone else will consume your harvesting, your reapings, and ultimately again, and will inversely impact your children. Va'omer. Furthermore, the Pasuk says, Mechamas b'nei Yehuda sher shafchu dam naki ba'artzam. From the Chamas of b'nei Yehuda. We'll say Chamas is different than Gezel. Gezel is stealing something without paying. Chamas is forcibly taking something and then throwing the money at the merchant. So you're paying for it, but you're taking it without the owner's consent. Va'omer. Val shol val beis adamim al asher hemesis ha-givonim. And the Pasuk says that Shaul, King Shaul, that he killed out the Givonim. All right, so what's happening over here? My Va'omer. So you might have thought that when you steal from someone, you're only adversely impacting the victim himself, but not the victim's family. Tashma basar banav ubenosav. No, but when you steal from someone, you're potentially adversely impacting not just the victim, but also the victim's family. You might have thought, but only when is theft bad? Only if you don't pay. Aval hechad yoev dami, but if you pay. In other words, we'll say, like chamas, I forcibly take the object and I forcibly pay. In other words, the person, the owner of the object, doesn't want to sell. And saying, you know what, I don't want to let what you want get in the way of what I want, right? So therefore, I take the object and I throw the money. You might have thought, that's not a big deal. But say first of the widest line. So you see from here, the Pasuk calls chamas, which means a forcible transaction, it causes a bloodshed as well. You might have thought maybe only theft is bad when you actively steal. Aval gramalo, maybe I will say kind of like causative theft, right? Indirect theft, maybe it's not such a big deal. So tashma al shaul ve'al beis hadamim ala sherhemis es hagivonim. So I will say the Pasuk talks about gives liability to Shaul that he killed the Givonim. When did Shaul kill the Givonim? Shaul never killed the Givonim. Elami tok shaharag nov irakohanim shayma speaking. Lahen mayim mazon ma'ala alav akasav kilo haragan. Rather, Rabbi says Shaul didn't kill the Givonim. But who did Shaul kill? Shaul wiped out Nov, the city of Kohanim. Nov, city of Kohanim, were responsible for supporting, really providing employment for the Givonim. Well, once Nov was gone, the Givonim had nothing to eat. And therefore, again, the Navi treats it as if Shaul stole from the Givonim. Sefer Avosei, just look what comes out of here. So the Gemara says, if you steal from your friend, even a Shavar Pruta, it's as if you've taken his soul. And we extend that to mean what? Not only his soul, but you adversely impact his children. Not only actual theft, but even Chamas is problematic. And not only that, even causative theft is going to be problematic as well. Now, both say that statement of Rabbi Yochanan that when you steal from someone, a Shavar Pruta, it's as if you've taken their soul. So we'll say that is a very dramatic statement and seems to be, if you think about it, just like a bit hyperbolic. Now, maybe not. Maybe we're still at a person who has no money. And therefore, we'll say you take a person's last pruta, that's it, they have nothing. I'll say, but maybe it means something a little bit different as well. We'll say, when you steal from someone, kala gozlas chavera. So we'll say, when you steal someone from someone, what is the message that you are imparting to the victim? If you're the thief, what's the message you're imparting to the victim? You're worthless. You're worthless, right? Because if you're worth something, if I respected you and I looked at you like as an equal, as a peer, then I wouldn't do this to you. So I will say, when you are gozel es chaveru, when you steal from someone, essentially, you make them feel like a shavar pruta. You make them feel almost absolutely meaningless and worthless. So I will say, to steal, in other words, people don't steal from people they respect. They only slight theft is the greatest display of disrespect. I don't care about you. You're worthless. Your ownership means nothing to me. As far as I'm concerned, you're a shavar pruta. Right? So we'll say, so thief makes a person feel like they're a nothing, like they're a nothing in the eyes of the person who stole from them. And we'll say, the worst thing you could do to someone in life is make them feel like a nothing. The worst thing you could do to someone is ultimately to make them feel like they are valueless. So we'll say, no, we've all been in situations in life where we've been demeaned, where we've been degraded, and when we've been made to feel like an absolute zero and nothing. And I will say, those are the most painful moments in life. And that pain is so acute, kilu notel nishmaso mimenu, that it's as if, mamish, you're taking the very life from a person. I will say, sometimes the worst crime we commit against another person is making them feel like a nothing. And when you do that, when you make a person feel like a shavar pruta, kilu notel nishmaso mimenu. I will say, how careful we have to be to build each other up. How careful we have to be mechazek one another. How careful we have to be in the way we treat someone else. You disrespect another person, gzela is one manifestation of interpersonal disrespect. You disrespect someone, that feeling of knowing that I'm a nothing in the eyes of someone else, that feeling of knowing that I'm a zero in the eyes of someone else, ultimately could be tantamount to mamish robbing that person of his very life. Incredible Gemara. All right, let's go weiter. Says the Gemara, about lokim min anashim. Rav said, but you could purchase. Remember again, you could purchase from the women. We had this list of items that you could purchase. So you could go ahead and purchase woolen items in Yehuda, linen items in the Galil. Aval lo yenos shmanu usalasos. Rav said, but you can't purchase from women wine, oil, and fine flour. Again, the concern over here is, are they selling it without the consent of their husband? V'lo mina avadim, v'lo mina tinokos, not from servants and not from children. Abashalom, abashalos, because we'll say, again, whole concern in all of this is, are they selling stuff that doesn't belong to them? Abashalom, mocheres isha barba v'chamisha dinar, kedei lasos kipa l'rosha. So we'll say, interestingly enough, a woman could engage in small transactions in order to buy herself a shetel, right? No, to buy herself a head covering. Since the assumption is that a husband wants his wife to cover her hair, and therefore, again, he has no problem if she's engaging in commerce in order to pay for a head covering. Okay, the kulin sha'amru lahatmin asr. But I will say once again, anytime you're engaging in a transaction with someone, and what they tell you, don't tell anyone about it, not good. So gabay tztaka, lokin medarmon. So what's actually interesting is that tztaka collector allowed to collect tztaka from women. And I will say this isn't a sneeze issue. This is a monetary issue. In other words, we have to be concerned that maybe the woman is going to give away money that doesn't belong to her. So you can take a little bit. In other words, if she gives a little bit of tzedakah, that's fine. but you can't take a large gift. In other words, because we're concerned, we'll say, obviously, this is all reflecting a different societal norm. But it's a concern, ultimately, again, that is she giving away money that does not belong to her? We'll say, interesting, the olive pressers could purchase large quantities of oil. I'm sorry, large quantities of olives, right? Why? Because we'll say, since it's a large quantity, a woman is not going to sell that unless, of course, she has the consent of her husband. Smaller quantities, we're a bit concerned, lest they go ahead and sell this without the consent of their husband. Shimon Leal Omer, Lochim Inashim Zesim Bemuad, sorry, Bemoed, Begala Elyon, Shebamim Adam Bo, sorry, it's right, it's really right, Bemoed, he changes it over here. Bemuat. So you know, we'll say in the Galil, you could even purchase small amounts of oil, of olives from women. Why? Isn't it? Shepamim adam bosh limkor al pesach beso venosin leishta mocheres. We'll say sometimes a person needs to make a little extra money, and he's embarrassed. The man is embarrassed, ultimately, again, to go ahead and sell small quantities of olives in order to make some extra money. So what does he do? He empowers his wife to do so. The Shabbos says, such a tremendous Moshe Haskell. When it comes to doing what is needed for the family, men are often still concerned about their ego. Women will do anything and everything they have to do to take care of the family. It's incredible. So like a man, he needs to make money. I don't want to sell the olives. I don't want to sell the olives by the front of the house. What's the chevra going to say? Right? What are they going to say to me during Haftorah when I'm in the kitchen, you know, making gear? Right? What are the guys going to say, right? Women don't care about these things. For women are mission-driven, and at the end of the day, if the family has to be supported, then we'll do what we have to do to ensure that the family is taken care of. It's incredible. So the Gemara goes weiter. Ravina went to Bei Mechuzah. Rami Kamei, Kavli Vishiri. Shabbos says, Ravina went to Mechuzah, and the women were selling to him or giving to him bracelets. Rashi says over here, Kavli Vakuzle. Rashi goes on both sides on this staff. Rashi says over here, where is it? Okay, I can't find it right now. Whatever it is. They were giving before, it's on the left side. Kavli v'kuzi, sharshara zav v'shiri tzmidin. So they were giving to him gold chains and bracelets. So he was coming and he accepted it from them. So apparently, again, Ravina was there collecting tzedakah. They were giving him gold chains and bracelet. So they asked, but how are you allowed to do that? After all, again, Ravina, we learned that the gabbai tzedakah could only collect small amounts. So the Gemara says, "Lo davar meruba." Amalei hani lebnei mechuza davar muatina. So Moshe said, "So Ravina said, you know, people of bnei mechuza are wealthy. They're wealthy. So for them, gold chains and bracelets, this is considered to be like a good script. You know, this is not a big deal for them, and therefore I could collect this from them for tzedakah purposes." Incredible. I was like, Mishnah. Muchen Shakobis Motzi Hare Elushalo. So we'll say, so now some very interesting cases. Now we're talking about the last Mishnah of Maseches Baba Kama. So we'll say, so now we're transitioning to a new topic. What's the topic? When you give over something to a craftsman, a lot of times after the craftsman does his thing, there's some leftover materials. So now the Shaila is, what is a craftsman allowed to keep versus what does he have to return? So Muchin, so we'll say Kovis. Kovis is a launderer. You give a launderer a woolen garment to launder, so often there's like some tufts of wool that come off in the laundering process. So Muchin Shakobis Motzi, Hari Elu Shalom. So ultimately, again, the launderer gets to keep the tufts of wool that come off the laundered object. Vasorek, someone who combs wool. Motzi, so Gemara says, Vasorek, Motzi Hari Elu Shabalabais. When a person combs wool, the wool that comes off with combing, that's given back to the owner of the wool. Koves notal gimel chutin vehein shalom. A launderer could go ahead and keep, I'll say, when you launder stuff, there's like additional strands of wool that come off the garment. He's allowed to keep up to three strands. Yes, sir, mikan, more than that, chare ilusha balabais. That becomes the balabais's. Im haya shachar, agabe lava, notal sakal. However, we'll say, if there are black threads on a white garment, he could keep all of the black threads. Hachayit, sheshira sachot, kide lit barbo. So we'll say, similarly again, if a tailor, right, leftover chut. Chut is a strand, right? No, better than a strand. thread, right? Achut kedelit for, in order to be used for additional sewing. That ultimate, or matlis shehu gimel agimel, or let's say again, the tailor does his thing. And there's a piece of fabric that is 3 finger breadths by 3 finger breadths. Hare elu shabalabayis. This becomes the property of the balabayis. Masha charash motzi b'matzad. Hare elu shalom. Shabbos say that which a carpenter, right? So you have a carpenter who's working with wood. So that which the carpenter, Shabbos says, now once he's working with wood, there are shavings, right? There are additional pieces. So whatever the carpenter is, and the carpenter is working, Shabbos say, with a matzad. A matzad is an ace, right? So he's working, I think that's how you pronounce it, A-D-Z-E. So I Googled it. It's what it is it's essentially a small axe. It's like a very small handheld axe with a narrower blade. Okay? So ultimately, again, so if the carpenter is working with the aids, then ultimately, again, those shavings belong to him. Ubikshil shabalabais. But if he's working, we'll say, kshil is an axe. Right? That's the zaftig axe. That's the real axe. So we'll say, so those produce more significant wood chips. So that belongs to the balabayis. But I will say, if the carpenter was working in the home of the balabayis, then I will say, interestingly enough, in that case, everything. Even I will say, again, the sarim is sawdust. Even the sawdust belongs to the balabayis. All right, let's go. Terabanan. Lokin mokin minakobes mipnei shein shalom. So both said, therefore, again, remember, the first thing we said in the Mishnah is that when a person launders a woolen garment, any of the tufts of wool that come off of that belong to the launderer. Therefore, you are allowed to purchase tufts of wool from a launderer, right? Because lemais again, they belong to him. So lokin mokin minakobes, so they shein shalom. Hakobes notel shnei chutin al yonin behin shalom. So again, the launderer could take the two upper threads from the garment, those like the threads that hang off the garment, and those belong to him. We'll say, Days last Amud of Masechas Bava Kama with 4 minutes to spare. We got this. The Gemara says, "Lo yatil bo yosem mishlosh achuvim." I will say, interestingly enough, you should not use more than three threads. Lo yatil bo yosem mishlosh achuvim. Then ultimately, again, you should not go ahead and utilize more than 3 stitches per loop. We'll discuss what that means in just a little bit. Lo yisro ka begel l'shasi ela arvo. Similarly, again, Rabbi said, when combing wool, you should only comb wool vertically and not horizontally. That diminishes on the amount of wool that's scraped. Remember, again, when you comb, by definition, some wool is coming off. So apparently, again, better to do it vertically and not horizontally. So the Gemara says, "Umishadei ula arkava lo l'rachbo." When evening out a garment, you even out the garment on its length but not on its width. V'imbala hashvoso. But halacha l'maaseh, again, if you want to go ahead and even it out, right? The Gemara says, "At tefach rashay." Up until tefach, you're permitted to do so. Fine. The Gemara says, "Amar mar shnei chutim." So Mar said, two threads. V'hanan tanan shalosh. But we went ahead and we said that he could keep up the 3 threads. Lokashya habalimi habekatini. One is talking about Rabosai, a thicker garment, and one is talking about again a smaller garment. Rabosai, so obviously, just want to point out, this goes without saying, a lot of these halachas, in other words, about what you can keep, what you can't keep, this is subjective and also societal, right? There was also very often like a minaga makam about what you are allowed to do or not allowed to do. The Gemara goes weiter. Furthermore, when combing the garment, you should only comb the garment vertically, but not horizontally. I vatanya ipcha. I will say, but we learned just the opposite. Lokashya habiglima habesarbala. One is talking about 2 different garments. Well, so Rashi says over here, there's glima. Rashi says it's talis asui l'chol yom. That's an everyday garment. Versus a sarbala, which was a more elegant garment. Good. V'lo yatel bo yosem mishlosha chovin. We'll say, furthermore, again, you shouldn't do more than 3 stitches per loop. By Rabbi Yirmiya, am tuye v'asuye. So we'll say, it's very interesting. So I'm sorry. So by Rabbi Yirmiya, am tuye v'asuye chad. So we'll say, when we say a loop, what constitutes a loop? Ultimately, again, is it passing the needle through and right and going ahead and bringing it back? Is that considered one? Oh, dilma amtuye ba'asuye trei, or maybe looping it through and bringing it back is considered to be 2 stitches. To which the Gemara says, teku. All right, umashil akava lo l'rachbo. You can even out the garment through its length, but not through its width. So, both says, remember again, all of this talking about what a merchant is permitted to do or not permitted to do. So you could go ahead and straighten it out, even it out in the length, but not the width. Vatanya, but we learned just the opposite. Lokashya habiglima habehemni. One is talking about a garment versus one is talking about a belt. All right, Kabbalah, so you know what we'll do? We're going to stop over here for today. So we'll say we are going to Meretz Hashem finish the rest of the Amud. It actually goes pretty quickly. The rest of the Amud in Meretz, I think. In Meretz Hashem by the Siyum tonight. So we'll say, so first of all, so we'll hold off the Masa of Baba Kama. So for those who are unable to attend the Siyum, so we'll post the link on the WhatsApp chat. In Meretz Hashem, it'll be live streamed on YouTube and on Zoom, Emirat Hashem, so however you want to watch it. So Bizoch Emirat Hashem to finish the Bosses. Remember again, the schedule for tonight is Emirat Hashem, 5:15 to 5:45 is welcome, hors d'oeuvres, 5:45 Mincha Ma'ariv. So which means even if you're running a little bit late, don't worry. We're not going to start the Shir before 6:15 tonight. That's going to be the earliest we start the Shir. And then Emirat Hashem will go from there into the Sudan, into the Siyum. We'll say it's going to be a dramatic and beautiful and overwhelming evening. What an accomplishment. Again, we're not finished yet, but we're almost there. We could see the finish line. We could see the Hadron Alach just out of sight. And I will say, Emir Hashem, so tomorrow, and tomorrow, we begin Bab Metziah. I will say, new Masechta, new beginnings. Maybe Baba Kama was your best Masechta. Maybe it wasn't your best Masechta. Maybe you were on time for Shir, you weren't on time for Shir. Maybe you came for Shir, you didn't come for Shir. I will say, the beautiful part is, every new Masechta comes with Daf Amnesty. Whatever you did beforehand makes absolutely no difference. Tomorrow is a brand new beginning. Tomorrow, you write for yourself a new narrative. Tomorrow, we begin a new journey together, and we are Zohar and Meretz Hashem to do it together. I will say, B'Shah Tov, Mitzlachas, and Mazel for tonight. Shukayach, everyone. All right, Chevron Zoom, have a great day, everyone.